Hello and welcome to another There Giants podcast. I am, as always, your host, Roger Munter. This week I have a pretty fun grouping of player interviews I've recorded recently down at the Diamond in Richmond. Shout out to the great Squirrels Communications Group, Trey and Blaine, who do such a great job hooking me up down there. I have short interviews with Reggie Crawford, Eric Silva, and Tanner Keast, three pitchers who have known some trials and tribulations along the way, some injuries, some things not going quite right. In Keast's case, a very long odyssey that has finally brought him up to the upper minors. So it's three great stories of kind of, learning through life. Before we get to those, I will say that There Are Giants podcast and website are completely supported by my subscribers. No advertisements or sponsors of any kind on any of my content, except for you, my readers and followers. So thank you all for helping me do what I do. If you want to become a subscriber, just go to theregiants.com, and it's a great time to get in as we get into the minor league season. With that, we'll turn to first my interview with Reggie Crawford. I've also put this out as a video on the website. And Reggie is he's a big person. He's a big talent. He's a big personality too. He's got a lot of charisma. He's very thoughtful, very articulate. And I think video really, really helps, that come across. So, I would, if you have a chance, take a look at the video version of this as well. He's a great guy to have in the system and a very impressive young man. Obviously Reggie's, just getting into his pro career, really. Various injuries have sort of sidetracked him, and we talk about that. We talk about his desire to be a two-way player and why that's been put on pause right now. We talk a little bit about his swimming background and what he expects of himself going forward. It's a good conversation with a really, really sort of thoughtful, intentional young man, and I think you will enjoy it.
Reggie Crawford, you are now a Richmond Flying Squirrel, and you made your debut, actually, this last week in Harrisburg, not terribly far from your hometown. Did you get good representation in the crowd for that one?
I did. It was nice. Got to see some family, some coaches, teachers, friends. It was a good time, definitely. I'm glad I got there in time to get to that trip. It was definitely refreshing seeing some of those faces. It's been a while, since I've seen.
How long had it been since some of your family had seen you pitch? Did your folks get out to the West Coast last year?
They didn't. It was like, I don't know, maybe last time was like in college. Probably the fall of junior year, or maybe Team USA, I think. So it's been a while, actually.
And even Team USA was weird because that was the COVID summer, so you kind of like scrimmaged most of the summer, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I guess I never really thought of that. Last time they saw me pitch, it's been a while.
I want to talk about your baseball development. Before I do that, I actually want to ask you about swimming. Mm-hmm. I was listening to one of the broadcasts, and I knew you were a swimmer because it was in the bios when you were drafted. Yeah. But he mentioned that you set the state record in freestyle when you were in Pennsylvania, which is that's a dude. Mm-hmm. I actually grew up with one of my best friends turned out to be an Olympic swimmer. So oh, really? I'm fascinated by the sport because it's so physical, but in a really interesting way. Did you have dreams when you were young of maybe like being an Olympic guy or going
that
on?
That was the plan. The plan for swimming was something that's going to pay for my college. And then, the Olympics. Because, the record that I broke in my junior year. It was set by this kid named Gabe Castano the previous year. He was a senior when he set it. And I think he's fourth in the world right now.
Wow.
Yeah, so I look at that. But I'm happy where I'm at. No.
How hard was it to give it up? What was that like? What was the process you went through when you walked away?
It was easy. Because baseball was my passion, my love. It's just baseball wasn't as easy to, travel for and stuff like that. It was a little bit easier, because swimming, it's just like they see video. They have a little, website with all the times and stuff. And that's realistically all they need. Where baseball, you got to bounce around, play on all these teams. Where we just couldn't really support that. So when an opportunity, arose to where I could do that, I jumped on it right away.
Obviously, when people talk about your baseball development, a lot of focus is on you know, how much time you've missed, how little time you've been on the field for a variety of reasons. COVID, we mentioned, injuries, the two-way stuff. Mm-hmm. From your perspective, from kind of like living this, does it feel like you've missed a lot of time? Does it feel stop and start? What's been your like experience of your baseball development?
I mean, I not the injuries per se, but I feel as though the lack of reps and lack of innings is a positive for me, because I feel like I'm in a decent spot given the amount of innings and the amount of pitches that I've thrown in my life. And, you know, the adjustments that I'm making, I feel like because of that, making adjustments week to week or month to month, whatever it may be, or day to day even, it's just that much easier, because it's almost like a clean slate. Like, I know what I need to do to feel comfortable on the mound, and I know what I, you know, some pre-outing things that I need to hit off the checklist. But, I mean, I see it as a good thing, realistically, because, I mean, I'm only going to learn more. And, like, that's something, that's a cool thought to have, you know?
So you're still pretty fresh as it is.
I'd say so, yeah.
Obviously, you know, you have some natural gifts. Being a left-hander who's as physically imposing as you are is a good thing in this game. How long have you been, like, the high 90s fastball, the, like, big equipment? When did that kind of happen in your life?
That happened the summer going into my junior year. Because, yeah, like, in senior high school, I was probably, like, I would get up to a 94 maybe once or twice. I'd be, like, 89, 92, some 93s. And then, yeah, I just wasn't throwing much. I was a thrower. I wasn't pitching. Like, I didn't know what I was doing on the mound. I would just go out there and throw. That's it. You know, but then over the course of 10 months, I was like, all right, like, I think the summer going into my sophomore year, I hit, like, 95 for the first time, knowing that I had no clue what I was doing. So I was like, this is really cool, because, you know, like, I did this, and I was like, I literally have no clue what the plan. There's no plan on the mound. I'm just going out there. And I was like, all right, let me dive into this and see, you know, over the course of a couple months or so, what we could do with this. So I just started watching YouTube videos, started watching, like, pitchers who move well, who the outputs, it's solid. Started mimicking some moves, tried to see what works, what doesn't work. And then 10 months later, you know, I go from 94, 95, I hit 101. And, you know, it was pretty cool. So, yeah, like, a lot of those, I'm always writing down notes. Different feels, different things that are working at that point in time, and I'm feeling like I'm in a good spot.
It's, you know, in a way, this reminds me of kind of Keaton Wynn's story, which was like during COVID, he just spent that whole summer in the gym and working and ramped the velo up, mm-hmm. and then he got to instructs and the velo was way above, and then yeah. immediately he had the Tommy John and had to like ramp it down and kind of build back up again. Mm-hmm. Is this like? Now you get to apply that stuff that you were learning a couple of years ago. This must be an incredibly exciting kind of period in your life right now.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that's on the forefront of mind and everything that, you know, my day-to-day caters towards staying on the field and, you know, some unfortunate series of events that, you know, have said otherwise in terms of my career so far in pro ball. But yeah, no, I mean, it is really great to be able to go out and throw and get real-time feedback on what works, what doesn't work. And a lot of the focus right now is just on myself. Like, obviously I'm doing my homework on the people that I'm facing, but realistically it's like if I can master my body, then I would put that up against anybody.
I was talking to Hunter Bishop about this a little bit a couple of weeks ago. When you do miss that time, you know, for whatever reason, what do you do to like keep your competitive Jones going? Like, what do you do to kind of feed that side of you?
I mean, there's always ways to you know, take place of that. For me, it was a lot of like visualization. I was always trying to visualize and trying to feel certain things without actually doing it, trying to trick my brain into thinking that I was doing it. And like a big one was the changeup. Like, I didn't have a changeup at all, and now I had no feel for it whatsoever. Didn't know why, and then had that downtime. Started thinking about, all right, what would the changeup feel like? What would it look like? Yeah. Stuff like that. And it's not anywhere close to where I want it to be. But, I mean, the strides that I've made on that pitch specifically in such a short period of time to where, like, I'm seeing decent results on the field, I'm really happy about that. So that was a big one for me.
So, obviously, one of the big stories that's kind of followed you the last couple of years is being a two-way player. Mm-hmm. You've shut down one of those ways this year after your time in the fall. Mm-hmm. what was that process like mentally? How did you make that decision or make that decision with the Giants? I'm sure you feel good about it now, but how'd you get to that point?
Yeah, so I mean, the fall league was definitely important for me, because if I didn't do that, then I definitely would have gone into the season, because I don't like question marks. I don't like there being any room to where it's all right, like, could I have tried this? Could I have tried this? The obvious is I've missed time. There's been a lot of times in between where I've been able to get just consistent at-bats. And that was the first time in a while where I was able to hit every day and, you know, go out there and play, see pitchers, stuff like that. And did I go out there and expect to hit 350? Absolutely not. But I knew that I was going to try to put myself in the best position to have as much success as I can.
Yeah.
But after that, you know, it gave me the answers that I was looking for. Like, an obvious was I was behind. The time that I missed caught up to me. So I was faced with something. Do I want to sacrifice time to get back to a spot in the box where I feel comfortable? And even then, if you're comfortable in the box, it's still hitting. Yeah. Like, you know, you still got to perform. Or do I put the bat down and focus on something that I've had success with, even given just such a low amount of innings, such a low amount of reps, and just run with that and see where we can take it? And that's when I approached the organization with, hey, like, I'm going to put the bat down. I want to sell out. I want to focus on this. And I'm extremely satisfied and pleased that I made that decision.
Yeah, I actually was out there for a week, 10 days or something.
Oh, yeah.
I watched a lot of your games. Yeah, I mean, you had some really good players. So you had a good example of kind of where the bar was. Mm-hmm. I mean, Victor Scott was really impressive. So it was a lot of good people in that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember talking to Chris Wright a couple years ago, and, you know, Chris was kind of a situation like he was first baseman in college, couldn't really hit. And I used to ask him if he missed hitting. And he was like, you know, and I'm coming in from the bullpen. I see him in the batting cage. I get that itch. Do you kind of feel, do you decide either guy's in the cage a little bit?
A little bit. I do miss it. I do miss it. But again, I'm very happy, because I don't make a decision unless I back it 110%. So it's not like I'm regretting it at all. But yeah, no, I mean, I miss putting a ball over the fence once in a while. I miss competing in the box. So I definitely miss it a little bit, but no, I don't regret my decision whatsoever.
Okay, so the last thing I want to talk about is role. You know, obviously you were drafted as a starter. The Giants have been, you know, slow going because of the innings issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that you're going to have a fairly low inning ceiling this year just because of, you know, they want to be careful with you. And yet your stuff can move you quickly. Do you care right now when you're pitching? Like, if you were to, like, jettison to the majors as a reliever, do you care kind of how you're being used at this point, or just you just want to be out there doing what you're doing?
No, and we've had this conversation. Like, for me and for them as well, it's staying healthy, getting on the mound, just getting experience. That's it.
Yeah.
Regardless of the level, it's just getting experience, getting time under my belt, and we'll kind of go from there. I've communicated that I do want to start, and I'm not pushing that, I'm not putting that on the back burner. Like, it's still in the forefront of my mind, but the main focus is, you know, just getting innings, getting time on the mound, and we'll go from there. Like, I'm not worried about that. I'm going outing to outing, and that's all I can control. So that's what I'm doing.
There was actually an interesting piece in Baseball America recently where it said that, like, one possible path is like Garrett Crochet with the White Sox, who like, you know, which almost from the draft to the majors, spent a couple of years as one of their better relievers and is now their best starter. Really, like, that's a path that can potentially be followed. Really, I read that. It's like, yeah, I can actually see that.
Exactly. And I think, like, you know, it's good that we're having open communication about these kinds of things, because, yeah, obviously you see Garrett and then you see a Hicks and stuff like that. These guys that were in the pen, now they're having, I mean, great success as a starter. But yeah, I think my situation, it's like, yeah, I can't expect myself to, you know, go out there and throw seven innings tomorrow, because it's been a while, a while since I've done that, you know. So we definitely have to build up. And, you know, again, if I'm starting, getting a few innings, or coming out of the pen and getting a few innings, that's the main thing for me. It's just getting on the field and playing.
I'm very excited. You're actually one of the very few guys in the organization I have never seen pitch live. So I'm hoping to knock that out pretty soon.
There we go.
And I can't wait to, you know, spend a few months watching
absolutely.
You go at it.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
Good luck, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
It means a lot.
Okay. And as I say, just a very, very impressive young man. And hopefully this is the year that he stays healthy, stays on the field, and it all comes together for him. My second interview, which is also going to be coming out at some point in the next few days on video, is with Eric Silva, who is the Giants' fourth-round pitcher in the 2021 draft and is now a member of the Richmond bullpen after having started in San Jose and Eugene the last couple of years. Eric and I talk about that. We talk about some of the difficulties he had in 2023. Eric is actually yet another tremendously articulate, sort of introspective, thoughtful young man who's really fun to have a conversation with. I remember talking to him when he was just 19 years old in San Jose, and he struck me then as somebody who was, he really thought about the questions you ask him. That's only increased as he's gotten older and matured, and you can tell how much sort of joy he takes in his experience of his teammates. We talk a lot about his Spanish language, which is very, very good. And just his experience of his surroundings. Another really impressive young man who I had a great time getting to know a little bit. Look for the video on that. And in the meantime, here's Eric.
Eric, I actually want to start with a question that has nothing to do with baseball. I was here a couple of weeks ago, and I overheard you talking to some folks in the stands. Your Spanish seems really, really good.
Yes.
Are you fluent in Spanish?
I am. I took Spanish in high school. All 4 years of high school, I took a Spanish class. And that allowed me to learn basically the basics of Spanish, kind of get the groundwork, build a foundation. And then once I signed with the Giants and I entered pro ball and I started talking with a bunch of the Latin guys and all the Latin players, they actually helped build my vocabulary to what it is now. So talking with them and actually living with them. In San Jose, I lived with Adrian Sugasti.
Uh-huh.
He at the time, and I was in 22, at the time, he didn't really speak the most English. So if we needed to communicate, I either had to speak in Spanish or he had to use the translator and put it in English. And then last year I was rooming with Jose Cruz, and I probably had the most growth with my Spanish then last year.
He left you mid-season though, because he came up here.
Yeah, uh-huh. And then Tanner Keys came in, and then I didn't have to speak Spanish anymore.
did you take the class that the Giants did as part of their education, the Spanish for English speakers?
No, I did not. No.
I mean, it's got to be a huge help to you, obviously, baseball-wise, because, you know, when you're working with Adrian, guys, you can do your work.
Yes.
But also just, you know, as a teammate, as a person, you know, interacting with people to the fullest, it's got to be a huge benefit.
Yes, extremely. I mean, I'm able to have conversations with the Latin guys and build a personal relationship with them. And there's no language barrier to stop any of that. So I think it's a huge benefit. I'm able to understand the guys better. I'm able to, overall just get a better feel for how the guys communicate and how their personalities are. I think it's better for a camaraderie standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, if you know the guys on a personal level, then there's no reason why you shouldn't have any team chemistry.
Right.
And building team chemistry, I believe, is how you win baseball games.
Do you end up being like an intermediary for teammates at times?
Sometimes, yeah. There's a lot of the Latin guys on this team, they speak pretty good English. So I'm there when it comes to like a serious talk or if something that needs to be broken down or translated in Spanish, they'll usually grab me or Lipso Nava.
Yeah.
Nava's pretty bilingual too. So.
Yeah. Parker Dunchy, who was here last year, was really, really fluent in Spanish.
Yes. I never got a chance to meet him, unfortunately.
Yeah. So I remember when we talked 2 years ago, and you were like 19 at that point. You're right out of high school. And one of the things you talked about was what a culture shock it is. Because, you know, for all your life, you're dealing with your peer group, basically. And now Spencer Bivens was one of your teammates. You got guys years older than you with way different experience. Now that you're more of a veteran, you know, is that kind of exchange one of the things you really value about, you know, your experience as a pro player?
100%. 100%. I believe that my 3 years here playing, this is my third full year, going on my third full year, has made an amazing impact on me on a personal level. I'm conversing and building relationships with guys that are 4 or 5 years older than I am. Some, it ranges from like 2 to 6 years older. years older than I am. It's cool because I get to pick their brains. You know, yeah. They don't necessarily treat me as a young guy anymore because, like you said, I am a 3-year veteran. But and they respect me as one of their own, being at this level at this age. But it's cool because any questions that I have, you know, on a personal level or just about life in general, I can go to any of the guys and ask them, and it's pretty cool because those questions, it engages good conversation and in turn builds a good relationship.
All right, so now let's turn to baseball.
Okay.
You're a reliever now.
Yeah.
Is this like a permanent thing, and how are you enjoying it? How do you like the new role?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's permanent. I don't want it to be permanent. But I enjoy it. It was definitely a big change for sure. It was a big transition coming from a starter into the bullpen. I had to learn to be more adaptable, to be ready on a day-to-day basis instead of on a 5-day basis.
Right.
My workload had to, I wouldn't say decrease, but we had to space it out a little bit more. But
how about the stuff like your arm care regimen, your strength regimen? How long did it take you to kind of figure those things out?
That was probably the biggest part,
yeah,
or the longest part to figure out and to get used to. Like right now, I'm lifting every single day, so I'm getting the workload is significantly smaller because I'm working out every single day. The amount of throwing that I'm doing is more consistent. It's not spaced out to where a starter could have, you know, one day reserved for light toss and then the next being long toss. So right now it has to be more suited to being able to throw and being able to be ready to throw every single day, no matter what, basically. So that has changed in the sense that I'm doing less but more frequently in all aspects, the strength, the throwing, the conditioning. And I'm not opposed to it. I don't dislike it.
I noticed you throwing with Cruz a lot.
Yeah.
Since you have a relationship with him, is he a guy who's sort of helped you adapt? He's someone you can pick their brains?
Yes. He's also my roommate this year. We're also rooming this year, and so we've built a really good relationship. Me and Jose Cruz have...
It's your third year together, right?
Yes, yeah. Our first year was in San Jose, 2022. Last year, we spent half the year in Eugene, and then this year, you know, we're living together. But we first met in Arizona when I first signed. He was, I think, doing extended down there.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, we hit it off. I like the way he talks because he mumbles when he talks. And it's very, very fast. And so I thought it was the ultimate challenge. I said, tonight, if I can understand this man talk, then I'm good. I'm good. I don't need to work on any more Spanish if I can understand him. So, but yeah, that relationship, I'm able to pick his brain. He also asks me questions. You know, we help each other. It's a good mutual bond.
As a lifelong mumbler, I totally get that. So, I mean, last year was kind of a weird one for you. You know, obviously going back to extended, coming back and changing roles. As you were going through that, like, how well could you process kind of what was going kind of sideways on your season and assess kind of how to get it back?
I was, last year when I got sent down to Arizona, it was a weird kind of couple months.
Yeah.
In terms of baseball, I think the mental aspect was on the weaker side, and that in turn affected my playing,
uh-huh,
my on-field ability. And I went down to Arizona for a couple weeks, and I'm mainly focused on my mental game,
uh-huh,
you know, on the mental aspect and try to improve that. And the biggest thing was for me to try to improve day to day. There's this, I wouldn't say like a method or a philosophical way of thinking, but there's a Japanese word called Kaizen. And it's sort of a method where you improve at least 1% every single day.
Uh-huh.
So I really dug deep and kind of put my nose down into that and really bought into that improving 1% every single day. And that significantly enhanced my mental game and my mental state. And honestly, they didn't tell me that I was going to be a reliever when I came back to Eugene. So when they said that, oh, you know, you're now going to be throwing into the pen, it did come as a shock at first, but working on that mental game and that mental strength and stability in Arizona helped me learn or helped me adapt to that kind of transition into being a reliever a lot more. So I was able to work on a game plan right away. I was able to work on a game plan with the physical, the strength, and the throwing aspect, but basically all aspects of the game. So that kind of break in Arizona really helped me, and I'm still using some things that I had or that I learned there to this day.
So when I was watching your games last year, and understand I'm watching through a video screen, so and not great video either. But it felt to me like when you came back, there was like a little more attack in your game coming off the hill. That there was been a little something that felt a little tentative in kind of like June, July, whenever that was. And when you came back, it seemed like it was attack. Is that part of what you're working on? Is that part of what you can get out of being a reliever rather than a starter?
Yeah. I like this question. I definitely had a chip on my shoulder when I came back, especially because personally I know my standards, and I have very high standards for myself, and I know what I'm capable of. So when they sent me back down, I kind of took it personally, and you know, I vowed to myself that I would never allow myself to be put in that position again. And you know, I'm not gonna lie, I did have some anger built up in Arizona. So when I did come back, I was using pitching as an outlet. So that fire that you saw was all internal, but the mental aspect that I worked on allowed me to tunnel it and to translate it into the game, which helped.
Awesome. Okay, I have a last question. Every time I talk to pitchers, I have to ask them about their pitch mix, because no matter how often I talk to you guys, it changes like from one interview to the next. You throw a lot of pitches. What's like working for you right now? What do you feel most confident in your mix at this point?
The heater and the curveball, for sure. Those are kind of like the 1-2 combos, the 1-2 punch combo. Slider and the changeup is more of like a secondary. But I mean, yeah, those are the four pitches that I'm mainly working with right now. I eliminated the sinker. I still throw it during catch play, but I don't. That's just mostly to stay behind on the ball. But yeah, I don't throw it in games anymore. So those four pitches is what I'm working with right now.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I'm having fun getting to watch you a little bit more often than I did in the past, and it's gonna be great to see where the journey goes from here.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, I'm excited as well.
I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Roger.
Okay, and my final interview for this week's podcast is with right-handed pitcher Tanner Keast. He's off to a terrific start in the Squirrels bullpen. He's got an 0.82 ERA, he has 13 strikeouts in 11 innings. Really gotten off on the right track this year. But that hasn't always been the case for Tanner. And so we talk about his very, very long and circuitous journey through baseball. Tanner was drafted way, way back in 2014 by the Phillies, and he was released for the first time way back in 2015. But as he explains here, he knew he wasn't done with the game, and that began an odyssey that has taken him through literally baseball leagues I have never heard of. He went through independent leagues for close to a decade. And let me just read off some of these leagues. The West Coast League, the Frontier League, pretty famous, American Association famous, but he also played in something called the Canadian American Association, the United Shore League he was in for a couple years, and he played in Mexico. And let me just read off all the independent leagues Tanner Keast played for. There was Victoria, Florence, Sussex County, Lincoln, Eastside, Milwaukee, St. Paul, Fargo, Moorhead, New York, Joliet, and Navajoa. Somewhere in there, he was actually signed by the Twins, And that was back 6 or 7 years ago. And that didn't last through the season. So he was off looking for his own team again. He has continually chased the dream, continually believed in himself. He throws hard. He's got good stuff. And now he's in the upper minors for the first time with a real chance to prove himself, something he's been chasing after for a decade now, which is a pretty amazing story. So let's finish up this week's with a conversation with Tanner Kiest.
I was watching the Somerset series, and like when you were pitching, the announcers were like, I've never seen this many indie ball teams on a player's card. So why don't we just go back to the start? You're like 19 or 20, whatever, yeah. And you get the news that you're released. Yeah. What's your thought process at that point in time?
I was 20, and I knew I wanted to keep playing. So I started trying to figure out how to get an independent ball. And I went to what was called the California Winter League. And that right. was kind of my start in the independent ball in 2016. And then from there, it's all played out to here.
But you didn't imagine it all playing out here at the beginning, right?
I didn't imagine it taking this long.
You played in, you play in the Frontier League. Like, people kind of know the Frontier League. You play in the Atlantic League. People know the Atlantic League. You played in some other, like, less well-known. There's, like, a county shore baseball league. Or there's a lot of places. How did you just, like, find all these teams? What's the process of, like, looking for a team by yourself to keep playing baseball? Like,
pretty much in that realm, it's kind of word of mouth.
Uh-huh.
So usually I would just get phone calls and – from different managers, and we would talk and then just come to a deal that way.
Is it just like people you know in the game, kind of, I heard about something?
Yeah, one or someone, a coach you knew or something, made a recommendation or that type of stuff.
Do you know, like, how many different places you live? Like, how many different towns you played in?
A lot. I think it was, like, 10 independent teams, something like that.
Plus, like, Mexico. The Dominican.
Yeah, I played in the Dominican Republic this winter. That was a really good experience.
How do you keep going? Like, what's the – just we'll get to the baseball side of this in a minute. But the mental side, mm-hmm. How do you just keep going team after team after team and chasing it?
I knew that this is what I wanted to do, and I believed that I could do it. So I just kept going regardless of what happened or results or whatever. I knew I could do it, and I just decided this is what I want to do, and I kept working towards it.
You can't do that without support too, right? You had to have people around you that weren't saying, come on, are you – you know, people had to be looking out for you in your circle, right?
Yeah, for sure. I have a great family and girlfriend, that type of stuff. But, I mean, I had people, too, tell me, you know, you should think about hanging it up, stuff like that. I never let that get to me.
What about health? I mean, obviously, for pitchers, health is a huge part of the situation. Did you have injuries along the way that sidelined you that you had to figure out how to rehab? Or?
Not really. No.
That's good.
Yeah, no, I've been able to stay pretty healthy.
So let's talk about the baseball side. Mm-hmm. Obviously, pitching or baseball in general is really, really hard. Even like, you know, when you're in the bubble of an organization and you have like data and support and technicians and mm-hmm. strength coaches and all that stuff. When you're kind of by yourself, how did you figure out or think about how to improve your craft? Like, how did you sort of self-help?
I worked out at a couple of really good facilities
mm-hmm.
During the off season. One's called PFA in California, and another one is called High Performance Training in Michigan. Uh-huh. And you know, those type of places have TrackMan and indoor mounds and other people to train with and weight rooms and stuff like that. So I was always frequenting those type of places.
You're a Californian. Have you always been based in California, basically?
For the most part, I the last couple of years I lived in Michigan.
So there was somewhere in between the various independent ball teams, there was a period where the Twins picked you up. And did you think at that time it's like, okay, this is, it was worth it. Now we're right back on the right track.
Yeah. I did. But looking back on it, I still had a lot to learn. So
give me a scouting report on you kind of through these 10 years. Like when you were first drafted, kind of who were you as a pitcher and what's the journey been like since then as far as, you know, refining your stuff and what you're doing on the mound?
I've mostly been a reliever in my career. I did have a couple years there where I was a starter, but I used to be a fastball, curveball, changeup guy, and now I'm just a four-seam, two-seam slider guy. I think I've learned how to become a good relief pitcher, I mean, over the years.
Have you always been like a big velo guy, a big stuff guy, basically?
Yeah, for the most part. For the most part.
And is that some, like, so when the Phillies released you, for instance, what did they tell you on, as you were leaving? What did they say to you at that time?
When the Phillies released me is because of walks. Yeah.
Which is, you know, a classic pitcher thing.
Yeah, it? And it was pretty much same thing with the Twins, but through the years and getting to know my delivery and stuff, I was able to clean up some mechanical stuff, and now I feel pretty confident.
That's really throw strikes. That's a big thing that you know some of the places that you're talking about deal with is like how you move in your body,
yes.
Right? So, have you? I assume during this decade you've come to have a lot better understanding of sort of who you are physically and how you move.
Yeah. People in the game of baseball in general, but especially pitchers, talk about feel a lot. I think that you need to be able to feel your delivery and know what you're doing based off of that feel, if that makes sense.
Because that's how you can course correct in the heat of the game, right?
Yeah, because words don't really help, you know, or, you know, visually seeing someone do it may be a little bit more helpful than, you know, just getting it told to you audio-wise, but the most important way, I think, is being able to feel your mechanics yourself.
You know, that seems really difficult to me because, I mean, just like I'm at home and I'm reading or writing or something and my wife's talking to me and I don't hear, you're on the mound and you're focused on executing a pitch and yet you also have to be hearing your body in a way. Like, how do you make those two kind of things function in your brain at the same time?
You got to be able to really focus in on the strike zone. That's number one. And then everything else comes secondary to that. Secondary to that, you know, obviously you got to control the running game. But really, I think that your main focus when you get out there is just commanding the strike zone.
So let's kind of move ahead to when you heard from the Giants. How did the process of getting signed by the Giants happen? When did you hear that they were interested in you?
My manager in independent ball named Daniel Schlereth, he gave me the phone number to an agent named Oscar Suarez. And I was able to send Oscar some data and talk to him and create a relationship with him. And then Oscar was able to pass that along to the Giants.
That's Mark Schlereth's son, who was the Diamondbacks first rounder back in the day,
yes,
right?
Yes, he was extremely helpful to me. He helped me with my mechanics and introduced me to Oscar, and I'm really grateful for his help.
Data is kind of a game changer for people who are trying to get opportunities, right? Because it's not just believe me, it's like look at this stuff. I can show you how,
yes,
what I'm doing.
That was important for me to get out of independent ball, and I'm grateful for that because you're absolutely right. It's like people can see stats, but the evaluators nowadays also want to know what your numbers look like data wise.
So what was it like for you coming into affiliated ball? Now, you started at San Jose? Eugene started at Eugene. As you come back into affiliate ball, has it been different for you, either like the quality of the hitters or just the facilities you're working in? What's been most important to you or what most notable for you as you've gotten back into affiliate ball?
The environment was definitely a little bit different. Certain things are, you know, obviously really improved, like the food and living conditions, stuff like that, are much better with an affiliated team. But other than that, I mean, a lot of the same. Definitely, I think hitters are going to be better here, but pretty similar.
I would assume there's more resources to help you, too. Yes. You got more coaches, more, yes. You know, yes, training, definitely. Weights and all that stuff.
Definitely. Anything you need player development-wise is provided for instead of having to try to seek for that stuff on your own.
Pretty cool. And, you know, what's cool about the Giants organization, there's some other guys who have really amazing kind of life journeys. You know, Spencer Bivens, mm-hmm. who was here last year, is another one who's kind of like you. Has been just, you know, keeping at it for a long period of time. So you got other people who kind of share your experiences a little bit.
I met him in spring training this year. That was cool. We were able to kind of have a similar path.
Yeah. So you got up to double A, you got your first double A strikeout, you got a win in the game. How does it feel? After you know, 10 years into your journey, where do you think you are at this point?
Feels good. I'm really thankful for the opportunity with the Giants, and I feel like I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
I'm hoping that this is all leading somewhere big for you, because it's really fun watching you pitch, and I think good things are ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
That's going to do it for this week's There Giants podcast. I'll be back with more Giants prospect talk next week. Thanks for everyone for listening. Again, if you want to get this material on a daily basis to your inbox, just come to the site and become a There Giants subscriber at theregiants.com. RogerMunter.substack.com. Thanks so much, and we will see you at the ball yard.